This is Vyas Purnima, Guru Purnima. This is a celebration of the appearance of Srila Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation of the Lord, Shaktivesh Avatar, who appeared in this world to compile the Vedic knowledge for the benefit of the inhabitants of Kali Yuga. In previous yugas, people had fantastic memory power and pure minds, so they could learn by hearing. Their books were their ears were their books. Their minds were their books. Even the Karmis, they say that books, printing of books came into being in the 1100 AD or something like this. The Chinese were the first ones to print a book. This was only for maybe 1,000 years books have been printed. 1,000, 2,000 actual books, first book. Of course, they had some palm leaves. They had scriptures written on palm leaves. Vyasadeva himself wrote on palm leaves. That was 5,000 years ago. But before Vyasadeva's time, people were just Shravanam and Kirtanam. They were just here. They had fantastic memory power. So Vyasadeva, he introduced the parampara in this material world on the earth planet in a line of Brahmins, for the knowledge coming through a line of Brahmins. You see that Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, he tells Arjuna that I spoke this knowledge to the sun god, Ikshvaku, and he spoke it to Manu. So this parampara, this knowledge came down through a line of Brahmins and through a line of Kshatriyas. The line of Brahmins was started with Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Vishnu spoke to Brahma. Brahma was the first Brahmin. And then Brahma spoke to Vyas. I mean Narada, rather. Narada Muni spoke to Vyas. But that's one line that's coming down. Then there's a line coming through the Kshatriyas. So this knowledge is actually all descending. It's called Avaroha Panta. Avaroha, like avatar, descent. Avatar. Avatar means descent. It descends. Knowledge descends from above. So therefore, to receive knowledge, we have to be below. If something is coming from above, if we want to receive it, then we have to be below. But if we go above that thing, then we can't receive it. It's practical. If someone is on the second story of a building and they're throwing out mangoes from the second story, if you're on the ground, you can receive them. If you go up to the fifth story, if you go to the fifth floor or sixth floor, then you've gone beyond, so you can't get any mangoes. So if someone doesn't go in the parampara, then they want to use their own power. They want to rise up and go beyond. They say, I don't need Guru, I don't need God. So this, receive knowledge, then we have to take a subordinate position. We have to be below. There must be someone above us. Above Vyas is Narad. Above Narad is Brahma. Above Brahma is Krishna. And Krishna is the origin. He's the Adi Kavi. He's the origin of the Adi Kavi. It says it yet Adi Kaviye. Brahma is described as Adi Kavi, the original intelligent person. But he's created from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So Garbhadakshaya Vishnu must be more intelligent. He's God. So everyone is below. Everyone's positioned below God. So therefore, you can see that the access to knowledge depends on humility. The access to transcendental knowledge depends on subordination, accepting an authority, accepting someone above us, and positioning ourselves in a lower position, a receptive position. Knowledge descends. Rain descends from the sky. It doesn't rise from the water. It doesn't rise from the earth. Rain falls. We say rain fall. We don't say rain rise. Oh, the rain is rising today. The rain is falling. It's not rising, it's falling. So the knowledge, the mercy is falling, the mercy is descending. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayu vidu. So the thought we could just discuss some notes that we have here. And this is appropriate to the introduction here. Diksha means surrender. Although diksha is the process of receiving transcendental knowledge, divya gyan, di means divya, and sha, di means divya gyan, and sha means sham, means like to destroy ignorance, sha, shama, divya, or diksha, diksha. But actually, that transcendental knowledge by which ignorance is destroyed, ignorance means bodily concept. Ignorance means material mentality. Ignorance means to exist on the plane of bodies, material bodies. And knowledge means to exist on the plane of consciousness, plane of the soul. So diksha is that receiving, you receive transcendental knowledge by which you can live on the spiritual platform. You can think in a spiritual way. You can see in a spiritual way. You can feel in a spiritual way. Because thinking, feeling, and willing are also attributes of the Atma. The Atma has a spiritual mind, a spiritual intelligence, a spiritual identity. But now it's covered by this body. And the umbilical cord, that connects the soul to the body is called the ahankar. Just like the baby. Baby is connected to the mother inside the womb by something called umbilical cord. I think you know. That's the connection, connecting cord. So the soul is connected to this body by the rope of the ahankar, the false ego. So this process of knowledge, knowledge is received from a sadhu, saintly person, guru. So the word sadhu means knife. Knife, chaku, you say chaku, you say knife. Sadhu means to cut, to sever, to release, to untie. So the sadhu, by giving diksha, by giving divya gyan, he cuts the umbilical cord. Just like a doctor, at the time of delivery of the child, he cuts the umbilical cord connecting the mother to the baby. Right? So the baby is on his own. He's free, he's released, he's attained emancipation, released from the connection with his mother. So the sadhu, with diksha, he releases the soul from the connection to the body. He cuts the soul, he cuts the umbilical cord. What is the umbilical cord? The umbilical cord is the ahankar, false ego, false identification. The plane of misconception. The plane of misconception, I don't mean airplane. I mean the stage of the understanding, P-L-A-N-E, plane. The plane of misconception, this means maya. Maya means misconception, wrong idea, misunderstanding, ignorance. Maya. Maya means that which is not. Accepting illusion to be reality. Accepting falsehood to be fact. Accepting the body to be the self. The body is a sharira and the self is the atma. The body is temporary and the self is eternal. The body is achit, nirananda, and asat. Right? Asat, achit, and nirananda. But the soul, on the plane of consciousness, the soul, we are a unit of consciousness. We are a particle of consciousness. Floating, we're just floating like a bubble, or like a drop of ocean water. We are floating in the ocean of consciousness. Consciousness is everywhere. The background of everything we see, the substratum foundation of all creation is consciousness. Behind this table there's consciousness. Behind the sun there's consciousness. Behind the earth there's consciousness. Everything is supported by and floating on and maintained by consciousness. Mayatatam vidam sarvam jagat avyaktamurtina matstani sarvutani nachaham deshavashtita. Krishna is telling that everything is supported by me. I am everywhere. Everything's within me. So this, what is Krishna? Krishna is the ultimate consciousness, the supreme consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So this is, this diksha is one level of diksha is receiving this knowledge by which we cut our connection with the material body. We cut the hankara. That's if we really, that's the real meaning of diksha. If one receives diksha and doesn't get released or emancipated from his identity and connection with the material body, then diksha has not taken place due to two reasons. Either insufficient knowledge, he has not received sufficient transcendental knowledge, or he has not realized that knowledge because he's not surrendered. So diksha, this particular note explains that diksha means surrender, which I was mentioning, positioning ourselves in a subordinate, or putting ourselves in a subordinate position. Receiving. To receive something, you have to be lower than the person received. So diksha, actually, when Krishna discusses diksha in 4th chapter of Gita, he's discussing, because he's the original guru, and he's describing to Arjuna, because Krishna taught Brahma, as you can say, Vishnu taught Brahma. But then Krishna also comes and teaches in this world. God himself acts as a teacher. He acts as a guru. And he taught Arjuna. So he says that you have to surrender. You have to surrender. It's actually Guru Pada Shraya. This term is in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In the Bhakti Anga, the 64 limbs of bhakti, the first one is Guru Pada Shraya. Sri Krishna Diksha Shikshad Diksha Dikshadi Shikshanam. Sri Krishna Diksha Adi Shikshanam. That's the second and third one. The second limb of devotion is Sri Krishna Diksha Adi Shikshanam. So beginning with Diksha, you take Diksha, then you get Shiksha. And then Guru Seva, Shraddha Seva, serve the Guru with faith. So Guru Pada Shraya attains all the limbs of bhakti within it. Interesting idea. To actually surrender to Guru, then hearing, chanting, remembering, archanam, vandanam, everything is there. And surrender, what does surrender actually mean? Like so many devotees say, oh, I surrender to my Guru. You're a surrendered soul. I surrender to ISKCON. What does that mean? So surrender, it means to realize that I don't have any independence. So we can see how difficult it is to surrender. Because the last thing that we want to give up is independence. We can give up food, we can give up sex, we can give up position, pratishtha, kamani kanak, we can give up comforts. We can live in the forest. We can do so many things, but we can't give up independence. Swatantra bhav. Very, very difficult. Even you see so many bhavas and devotees and rishis, they live alone. Why do they live alone? Because of independence. They live alone because of independence. That independent spirit. So surrender means to realize I really don't have independence. Now, out of foolishness, we think we're independent. So what does it mean, disciple? We met someone the other day, and she was an old friend I knew, and she said, are these people your disciples? I said, no, they're my friends. Because if I was to say they're disciples, that means that they're following discipline. The disciple means discipline. So discipline is not a small word. Discipline means that they've sacrificed their independence. They've forfeited their independence to the master. So they may have some connection with me through some initiation process. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're disciples. It's not so easy thing. Like once Prabhupada was walking with some of his, quote, disciples, quote unquote, and one of the quote unquote disciples said, Prabhupada, some of the devotees in the temple, they're saying like this and that and this and that. Prabhupada said, wait a minute, it's not so cheap to be a devotee. It's not so easy to be a bhakta. You think everybody, just because they shave their head and they're wearing neck beads, kanti mala, that they're devotee? Vaishnava, he said, Vaishnava is not such an easy thing. That's why we have many terms. It's not that as soon as you put on Vaishnav, this Vishnu Tilak or Urdhva, it's called Urdhva, Urdhva Pandra, Vaishnav Tilak, the upward marks of a devotee of Vishnu, Ram, Nrisimha, Krishna, Narayan. This is Vaishnav Tilak, Urdhva, this upper. Then you wear some Kanti Mala, Tulsi Kanti. All Vaishnavas wear Tulsi Kanti, mostly. Now you're a Vaishnav. Everyone is a Vaishnav. But no, there's actually many words describing the persons who approach Vishnu with the idea or conception of devotion. And some are called Vaishnav Praya. Praya means almost Vaishnav. Getting close. Vaishnav Praya. And then there's Prakrita, Prakrita Bhakta. Then there's Kanishta, Adhikar. He has the lowest qualification to become Vaishnava. He has the least faith. And there's Madhyam Adhikar. He has a little bit more faith, a little bit more qualification to become Vaishnava. Then Uttam Adhikar. He has the most qualification, Adhikar, the most qualification to become a pure Vaishnava. So there's all these different levels. So it's not so easy to be a disciple. Because disciple means one who follows discipline, rules and regulations. He actually follows the order of the spiritual master. As we've oftentimes said, oh, how can I please you? What is your order? Oh, it's easy. Get up at 4 o'clock. Oh, wow, Hare Krishna. That's a little hard because I don't take rest till 1. Okay, take rest at 10. Well, I can't, this, that. Well, then, where's the discipline? You're following another discipline. You're following the discipline of your office. You're following the discipline of your business. You're following the discipline of your family. It's like this. You have to follow some discipline, some rules and regulations. My office is dictating my discipline. My family is just dictating my discipline. So my family is my guru. My job is my guru. It sounds like hard words, but we have to speak honestly what the situation is. So for whatever reason, this is the reality, that our life has taken such a turn that it's so complicated and so demanding. In the old days in India, most of the people were agrarian. Agrarian means they were connected to the land. Of course, there were four varnas. There always are four varnas. But many, many people had a little bit of land. They grew some crops. They had some cow. And life was simple. Prabhupada would say, I remember him saying, in the old days, 100, 200, 300 years ago in India, not very long ago, people would work for 3 months. They would work for 3 months and they do the winter harvest and get some grains. Then they would take it easy. In the springtime they go to Holi and this festival and that festival and all, Ram Nomi, and celebrate different festivals. Then rainy season would come and then they would rainy season. He said they would work like 3 months a year, make one crop 3 months a year. They would work for 3 months. You plant and then you harvest. The rest of the time they would just engage in bhajan and reading and going on Tirtha Yatra and just relaxing. They work 3 months a year. And then sometimes they would work twice and have two crops a year. But now they're having crops every day. They finish planting one crop in 3 months. Now they have four crops in a year. Corn at this time, sugar at this time, chickpeas at this time, wheat at this time, rice at this time. They don't stop because they're driven by so much demand for money and so much rat race life, even in the country. So this creates another discipline. But so that's why I say, therefore, someone might say, oh, how many disciples? So Guru, like once they asked Bhakti Sant, they said, oh, I heard you have thousands of disciples. No, I have maybe one or two. I have one or two disciples. One or two that are actually following discipline. Many followers. Yes, 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 many followers. 60,000 followers. Just like I know that today is Guru Purnima. And there's one sannyasi in Mathura. And many, many Brijvasis go there today. And they promise. There's different levels of connection with the Guru. So some of them come and they promise to follow one or two regular principles. So they get one strand of neck beads. And some promise to chant all four regulative principles and chant four rounds a day or whatever, so they get some java beads. And Then later, if they chant 16 or more, then they get a name and all these things. So then later you'll meet them, and they're okay. They're pious, religious people. They're interested in Radha and Krishna. You say, who is your guru? Oh, so-and-so from Mathura is my guru. Acha, what is your program? Oh, I have these neck beads. I'm wearing Tulsi Kanti, and I'm following one principle or whatever. So they're going in the right direction. So there's different levels even of discipline. So people think, I mean, really discipline means, disciple means one who follows discipline, the rules and regulations and order of the spiritual master. But what do people actually think? People think, if I surrender to a guru, Guru Padashraya, and I follow discipline, then I'll lose my independence. Because surrender means what? Because ultimately surrender means surrender your independence. Like most people think, oh, I took initiation, here's my dakshin. And they calculate, okay, I can give 10,000 rupees. Okay, Gurudev, here's 10,000 rupees dakshin. So I surrendered, I gave 10,000 rupees. Of course I give my wife a lakh every week. I surrendered to, so I'm more Guru Padashraya, or Patni Padashraya, I have more shelter at the feet of my wife, I'm more surrendered at the feet of my wife than my guru. I give her a lakh every week, and once in my life I met guru and I gave 10,000 rupees. But that's not what guru is interested in. He's not interested in money. He's interested in seeing how much you surrender your independence. This is the real thing. Guru doesn't need the paisa, doesn't need anything. Krishna's maintaining. Yoga shema baham yam. So this is what people are afraid of. So everyone wants to remain independent. Although no one in reality is actually independent in this material world, God has designed the material world in such a way that no one can live independently. Now this is called philosophy. If someone has half a brain, not even a full brain, he has half a brain, he'll look around, he'll realize that I cannot exist in this world independently. I depend on cows, I depend on the land, I depend on the farmers, I depend on the rain, I depend on the sun, I depend on the water, air. I depend on so many things. I am not Swatantra. God is Swatantra. Abhigya Swarat. It's told in first verse of Bhagavatam. Abhigya Swarat. He's all-knowing and Swarat, independent. Like we say Samrat. The emperor is called Samrat, but this is Swarat. He is totally independent. No one, he doesn't depend on anyone. Everyone depends on him. So, how is it like that? Because God has designed the world like this. So the recommendations given that better that we have a choice. Basically, it's like this. Because we don't have independence, either we're under the jurisdiction of a master called Maya, or under the jurisdiction of a master called Krishna or Guru. So because can anyone argue the point that they're independent? Someone say, I'm totally independent. Okay, are you independent of the laws of nature? One of the laws of nature is, for one who takes birth, death is certain. Birth, growth, maintenance, produce byproducts, dwindling, and dying. There's six changes, right, that everyone goes through. Janma, Mrityu, Jiravyadi, Dukkha, Dosha, Nadarshanam. Are you independent of these things? Are you independent of this? Or this? Or the call of nature? Oh, are you independent of eating? Do you depend on eating? No, I don't eat. I don't need to eat. Are you independent of air? You depend on air. If I take... Oh, you're independent. Okay, go in this closet for 3 days. What will happen? You'll die. Why? Because you depend on air to live. So that's the design. That's the fact. So no one can live independently. So knowing that, if we realize that, so it's better if we follow the discipline of the spiritual master by choice, when we choose to follow that discipline. Otherwise, we'll be forced to follow the discipline of Maya. The ultimate force is death, where one gives up the human body and we get another body where we completely lose. So then when we give up, that's the ultimate force, because at death we completely lose our independence. Especially if you have a human body now and we don't use our minute independence to serve God, then we act under the discipline of Maya and act in any immoral or independent way, then what we may have next life, we may become an animal or a tree. Now that we have very, extremely limited independence, practically nothing. What independence does a tree have? Does it have any mobility? Zero. Can't even move. When it's hot, it can't run away from the heat. When it's cold, it can't run away from the cold. It has to tolerate. It has no choice. What independence does an animal have? He's just driven by his senses. A dog, he has a powerful sense of smell, and his ears are also quite good. But he can smell very good. So you see, while he's walking down the street, and then some strong smell is out in the field, immediately he'll run there. The smell will pull him. So he's not independent, simply a fragrance. Ganda, Gandharaj. The Ganda will become, this fragrance will become the master of the dog. He'll become dependent on the fragrance. He'll run towards that fragrance. He lives in a world of fragrance. The dog sees the world through the nose. He's controlled by the nose, fragrance. He just runs everywhere. So what independence he has? He's controlled by his senses. He's dependent and subservient to his senses. So now we look at ourselves in the human body. We have some limited independence, but if we misuse it, we can become an animal or a tree. And then we don't even have the independence to walk. We can only stand there and tolerate the heat, rain, smoke of cars and passing by. Imagine if you're a tree beside the freeway or beside Ring Road or something. So much smoke. I mean, trees require require carbon dioxide to grow, not carbon monoxide. Cars emit smoke, which is full of carbon monoxide, which kills anybody that takes too much of it. So this is a little bit difficult. So surrender is the biggest revolution happening in a person's life. That's a big one. This is a great phrase. Surrender is the biggest revolution happening in a person's life. Like sometimes they say the biggest purchase a man will ever make in his life is to purchase a house. Car is next one. So how, car puts you away for 5 years, house puts you away for 50 years, 30 years paying the mortgage and 20 years fixing it up, maintaining it. So your house puts you away for 50 years and then your body's finished. Your body's finished by the time. You get the house when you're 20, you die when you're 70. So 50 years of your life is tied up at serving your house, which you purchased to serve you. But then you become a slave of your house. Your house becomes your master. So they say that's the biggest purchase in a man's life. But in the metaphysical sense, or even psychic sense, surrender is actually the biggest revolution happening in a person's life. Materially, you can say when a person is living at home and unmarried, they feel somewhat protected, somewhat secure and happy and peaceful. And then someone says, well, guess what? Now you're going to get married. Oh, I have to leave this house and go to some other house. The ladies, like in India. That's surrender, big surrender. I have to give up my so-called independence and cooperate and submit to live with someone else. That's going to be a heavy price to pay. So that's big enough itself. But surrendering to God, that's a big revolution, to surrender to a man or woman or whatever. But surrendering to God is the biggest revolution happening in a person's life. When you mention the word surrender, people become fearful within their minds. But in reality, the activity of surrendering to God and Guru, or Guru and God, is the most liberating thing that can ever happen to someone. Because people think, like the police come and say, all right, you're under arrest. So then they take you to jail. So you have to surrender to the force of the police department. So that's fearful. Or death comes and says, all right, get out of this body. So that's fearful. You have to surrender to death and lose your body. So the word surrender implies fear, because we have to give up something we're attached to. And we have to give up our attachment. Our attachment is this body, or what we think is so dear and near. But actually, it's just the paradox. Because you surrender, we have to surrender anyway. We're under the discipline of Maya or God. So being under the discipline means you're controlled. You're disciplined. You're following the rules and regulations of Maya. That's, you're a disciple, following discipline. Or you're following the rules and regulations of Guru and God. That's discipline. So when you follow the rules and regulations of Maya, or the discipline of Maya, what do you get in return? Janma mritu dravyadi dukkha doshana darshanam. You get a bad deal. You lose your investments. You get nothing, zero. But actually surrendering to God, you get liberated. So this is the most, surrendering to God is the most liberating thing that can happen to someone. It seems paradoxical or contrary. You surrender and you get free. You think, I'm not surrendering to anybody. I'm independent. I'm free. I'm independent. I don't take orders from anybody. I don't serve anybody. I'm independent. I do my thing. And actually, you're totally bound by them. You're not doing anything. You're being pushed by the modes of nature. You eat too much food, you're forced to go to sleep. The mode of ignorance controls you. Eat too much sugar, too much chilies, and you start getting angry and start getting passionate. So then Rajagun controls you. So you're just controlled by the modes of nature, which is Maya. Maya is controlling us through the strings. Like we see those paintings in Gita. The Gita has a puppet, and the modes of nature are making him dance. So this is well, what happens, it's a paradox, means it seems the opposite. Surrender seems the opposite of liberation. Surrender seems like bondage, and liberation seems like freedom. We say liberation, that means freedom. Oh, you're liberated from your debts. Well, that means I'm free from my debts. I owe somebody $1 million, and they said, no, we've liberated you. That means we've freed you. We paid your debt. Well, if you surrender, it means you've come under control of someone. You lose your independence. So where's the freedom? Surrender. Okay, you're surrendered to me, I'm going to control you. Oh, but there's no more freedom. Now you're stealing my freedom. I can't go anywhere, I can't do anything, I surrender to you. So this is a funny thing. You surrender and you get free, you get liberated. Because now we're bound, we think we're independent, we think we're free, and we think we're independent. We're free to die and take another birth, and die and take another birth and die. So our independence, that's why I start off saying there's no independence. First of all, you have to understand there's no independence. We're either dependent on Maya or dependent on God. But Maya makes us think we're independent. There's no independence anywhere in the material or spiritual world. Everyone is dependent on Krishna. So this is very... So when we say... That's why this very first limb of bhakti is surrender. Guru Pada Shraya. Shraya means take shelter, means surrender. It's a big revolution. It takes a while to prepare your army. If you want to have a revolution, you have to collect soldiers and horses and elephants and weapons, and then go and have the revolution. Try to take down the king, revolt, overthrow the king. So the king is a false ego. The false ego is controlling the empire of our body, or the empire of existence. The empire of our existence is being controlled by the king, the Raj named false ego, Hankar Raj. Maharaj ki jai ho. So you have to rally an army to have a revolution. You have to rally an army with bowmen and swordsmen and cannons and tanks. So what is that army? That army is Sadhu Sangha. What is that army? It's Divya Gyan. You have to get transcendental knowledge and the mercy of Mahan Kripa, the association of devotees. Then you can start a revolution. And then with that force of Sadhu Sangha and force of Divya Gyan, transcendental knowledge, you can overthrow the emperor. You can overthrow the false ego and then surrender to the right master. Now the false ego is convincing you that being surrendered to Maya is independence. Being surrendered to Maya is independence. Being surrendered to Maya is freedom. This is Ahankar Raj's very clever preaching. So by Sadhu Sangha and Divya Gyan, then you can get the strength to overthrow the emperor, Ahankar Raj, and then surrender to the real master, Giriraj. Not Hankar Raj, but Giriraj. Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai. And he's an all loving master, and all affectionate. He's an all loving master, an all affectionate master, an all charming master, and beautiful. Satyam Shivaram Sundaram. He has all these qualities. He's the truth, the absolute truth, but he's Sundaram. He's beautiful and auspicious. Not only truth, truth is Brahman. Brahman. Jagannamitya Brahman Satya. Vivekananda and Shankar, they preached. He summarized all the Vedic aphorisms in this. He said, this is it. Of course, this is Advaitin. Vaitin Siddhanta. Jagannamitya Brahman Satya. This whole material world is mitya. Mitya means false. Everything is false. The body is false. Relationships are false. Creation is false. It's all false, temporary. It's meaningless. Brahman is true. That's it. But Brahman is nirgun, a nirakar. Brahman is nirgun, a nirakar. There's no qualities. There's no form. But Vaishnava Siddhanta, Gaudiya Siddhanta, Vaishnava Siddhanta, the truth is satyam. Brahman is satyam. It's truth. It's eternal. It's truth. But it's Shivanam and Sundaram. It's all auspicious and it's beautiful. So beautiful means it has qualities. Beauty means quality. If you say the truth is beautiful, then that's a qualification of the truth. Satyam. Satyam, Shivaram, Sundaram. The three S's. Sham Sundar. Satyam, Shivaram, Sundaram, Shamasundaram. Shamasundar. Gaurasundar. So the truth is beauty. Beauty. Shivaram means auspicious. Like Shiva means auspicious, Shivadam. Shivadam means that which gives auspiciousness, Dam, Dam or Da, Dadati. Satyam Shivadam Sundaram. So this truth, this absolute truth is beautiful. And by associating with the absolute truth and surrendering to the absolute truth and serving the absolute truth and becoming dependent on the absolute truth, one becomes also beautiful and auspicious and lives forever. No more death. Satyam Shivaram Sundaram. So this is Krishna consciousness. This is such an interesting word, surrender. As soon as one surrenders to the spiritual master, he is actually liberated. Because the bondage to samsara, which is a cycle of birth and death, is due to independence. The more one tries to remain independent from God in the material world, the more one becomes bound. That's amazing. The more you try to become independent, the more you become bound. And the more and more you surrender, the more and more you become liberated. That's really interesting. This is called a paradox. It's like, one take away one equals one. Or no, one take one, one equals two. It's like, wait a minute, doesn't make sense. Initially, it doesn't make sense. The more you try to become independent, the more you become bound. The more you become dependent, the more you become liberated. Because you become dependent on the controller of the material world. Even Shiva, when the worshippers of Shiva, they worship him and they ask him for liberation. He says, I can't give that. I can't give that. Only Vishnu can give that. Only God can give that. I can't give that, Brahma can't give that. Only Vishnu can give that. And even when he kills demons, he liberates them. What to speak of devotees? Demons get liberated by being killed by Vishnu or Krishna. The more we try to remain independent from God in the material world, the more we become bound. The more we surrender to God and become dependent on God, the more and more we become liberated. The act of surrender is the most wonderful and the most liberating experience in one's total existence. Have you ever experienced it? The act of surrender is the most wonderful and most liberating experience in one's total existence. That means your total life. If that day comes, if that life comes, and we actually surrender. There are so many verses in Puran describing, from Ramachandra speaking, Krishna speaking, with similar concept. Ramachandra is speaking, Lord Ram is saying, if someone comes before me, anyone comes before me, some stands before me, he just says like this, so we can say his Murti form or any form, Archamurti or Leela Avatar or Prakash Avatar, any form, but Ram is speaking. He says, if anyone comes before me and say, my dear Lord Ram, just don't think about what I was or what I am, but from this day forward, my dear Lord Ram, from this day forward, I surrender unto you. I surrender unto you. I've given up. I'm not fighting anymore. I surrender unto you. If someone comes before me and just says this, then I accept that person as my own, and I will take them to the spiritual world. They will become my ward. They will become my dependent. And I will take care of them. Naturally, you can imagine, even think of this analogy. If you go to some rich person, rich man, you knock on the door and you say, oh, Mr. Rich Man, I am very destitute. I am very poor. I have no good qualities. I am very wretched. And I don't have a good birth. I don't have any knowledge. I don't have any skill. I don't have any abilities. But I have come to know from the villagers here, the people who live in this village, that you are a very noble man. You're a very cultured man, very highly educated man, a very, of course, prosperous and wealthy man, a very charitable man, and a very good man. And you're a very fortunate person in this world. But I am not so fortunate. So I would like to lay my head at your feet. I'd like to surrender whatever, I don't have much in my hand to offer you. Whatever little bit I have, whatever little bit of energy I have, my mind is not very powerful, my memory is not very good, I don't have any qualification, I don't have any degree, I don't have any talents, I don't have any skills, but whatever way you can use me or engage me or use me for your happiness or service, I would like, from this day forward, I like to dedicate and surrender my entire life for your pleasure. Now what do you think that rich man will do?
Accept him.
He'll probably start crying. But even his wife could never say such a thing. Because she'll have so many conditions. She even lists the conditions. I'll do this for you on this side, one column. If you do this for me on this column. And it'll be 21 things that I'll do for you and 64 things you'll do for me. So this type of mood, this type of mentality, or what we say, abhiman, and this type of bhav, is very attractive. This is declaring dependence on God. So in this analogy, we took a man of this world coming to surrendering to a rich man. But take any one of us, as aspiring devotees or bhaktas, surrendering to Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, Harishta Devata, and how much it must capture his heart. How much it must attract his attention. If we have such a mood, such a sharanagati bhav, such a dainya bhav or sharanagati bhav, how much he will feel that, oh yes, you are my ward. You're so dependent. You are so surrendered. Now come with me. And because I control the entire material world, I will liberate you. I have the power to liberate you, and I will liberate you because you've captured my heart. How have you captured my heart? By your surrender. Because you've given up everything and become totally, because you become totally dependent on me, and I am the independent controller of everything, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Bhaktaram Yagatapa Sam Sarvalok Maheshwaram, because I am the independent controller of everything, Aham Sarvasi Prabhu Matasarvam Pravarti, I will take, now you're fallen at my feet, you have nothing but me, you're totally dependent on me, well this is what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to take you by the hand and I'm going to take you out of this world. I'm going to emancipate you, liberate you from this world once and for all. Because you surrendered unto me. So therefore, the act of surrendering is the most wonderful and most liberating experience in one's total existence. Because when you surrender, you meet God. When you surrender, God takes you by the hand and says, oh, come with me, let's go, I'll take you from the material world. But never at any time in any life can Maya ever say that, oh, yes, you surrender unto me, I'll liberate you from the material world. This is so nice. I like this sentence so much. The more we try to remain independent from Krishna in the material world, the more we become bound. And the more and more we surrender to Krishna, the more and more we become liberated. And surrendering is like breathing. Surrendering goes on all the time. As soon as you stop breathing, you die. As soon as you stop surrendering, you stop advancing, you stop growing. If you stop breathing, you don't grow. You don't maintain, you don't grow, you're finished. So as soon as you stop surrendering, you don't maintain in bhakti, and you don't grow in bhakti. You dry up. Your bhakti lata gets shriveled up. It dries up. It, what they call, wilts. It's called wilting. It goes, you see sometimes it plants like this, and it gets no water and goes, bends over. Leaves fold in half. It's called wilting. W-I-L-T, wilting. Shriveling up, wilting. So it happens, it's a metaphor, bhakti lata. Our devotion, our love, our attachment, our feelings for God, they diminish. So the more and more we surrender them, and more and more we become attached, and more our feelings increase. So this act of surrendering in one sense, it's, sometimes people say, oh, I surrendered to Guru. It's all over now. I think it's a one-time thing, like, well, I'm married now, that's it. I surrendered, I got married. I moved into this house. Oh, okay, now just sit down, relax. So wait a minute, every day I have to work on this marriage and I have to work. I didn't realize it was like this. It's every day, if I don't put energy into this marriage, it'll go belly up, it'll flop up, it'll end. So this is the same as bhakti, we have to continually put energy into it. So, this is the most liberating experience in one's total existence. This is the most fortunate moment in a person's life. The most fortunate moment in a person's life is when they surrender to God. But it takes about 50 million lifetimes. You get close. Life after life, you get closer and closer. Oh, we think we surrender. I took diksha, I took bake, I took sannyas, I took this, that, whatever we took or accepted or what we thought was some type of surrendered position in relationship to Guru and Parampara and God. But actually it was only an approximation. It was only a bas, Sharanagati abas. It's like a reflection. A reflection of Sharanagati, a reflection of surrender. Well, it's not surrender in its true form. It's not true blooded surrender or pure shud Sharanagati. It's not pure surrender. It's approximate. So in one lifetime we approximately surrender, almost surrender. Then next lifetime, well, we almost surrender a little more. Then the next lifetime we almost surrender a little more. Then finally, in some special lifetime, at some point in time, then we realize, when we actually surrender, that this is the most fortunate moment in my entire sojourn in the material world. That actually, I've finally done it. I've really, really surrendered. I let go of everything. And I'm speaking now, not from realization or direct experience, but philosophy. Now, this is not a cheap thing. This is not an easy thing. This surrender is everything. And it's dynamic. It's growing. It's developing at every moment. That's why diksha is called dvija, second birth, do janma. It's called new birth. You have to die to live. You have to die to live. Famous German philosopher, 1600s, Hegel. He had philosophy about life, and he said one has to die to live. That also sounds like a paradox. If you die, you're dead. Death and life are the opposite. Life means movement, growth, action, fun, friends. Death means you just burn up. You get burned up and turned to ashes. Right? It's all over. Family's over, relationships over, fun's over, everything's over. Death. But he said, but this is a paradox. This is opposites. It doesn't make sense. You have to die to live. His diksha is called second birth. Dvija. So when you get a second, when you take birth again, it's a new life. Like we say, we have an expression in English, turn a new leaf. Turn a new leaf. You had hard times or difficult or bad times, so now you're in a new star or a new grahan or a new place or new house or new relationship or new job. So it's time to start again. Second start, sometimes I say second start in life. I started off in life, wasn't a very good start. I went pretty bad. But now I have a second start, a new lease on life. We have a lease. I leased this flat. Oh, this is a junky flat. Now I go to another flat, nice flat, a new lease. I have a new lease now. So a new lease on life. I start my life again. I lived so many years like this and got nowhere. Useless life. So now I live life in a new way. A new set of friends. Like when you die and you take birth, you get everything new, right? New body, new mother, new father, new friends, new place, new job, everything new, new senses. And it's all new and different. And you start all over again. So that's what diksha should mean. Diksha should mean this. It's a new birth. So new birth doesn't mean same old, same old. Same food, same friends, same thoughts, same actions, same ideas, but diksha. This is not diksha. Diksha means transformation. It means metamorphosis. Metamorphosis means metamorph. Morph means murti, form, rupam. Meta means change. So you have a little tadpole, you have a little caterpillar. It looks like insect, so many legs and furry little thing. Then it goes, makes a little cocoon, stays for some months, then flies out, comes a butterfly. Looks like an insect, now he looks like a fly. I mean, looks like a little bird. So this is the real meaning of dvija. And sometimes people say that when they're approaching Krishna consciousness, they say, oh, I'm losing my friends. You know, my buddies, you know, my school buddies, my relatives are saying you're weird. What is this, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and Murti Puja, and you're always going to Vrindavan all the time, as yatras. What is this? No disco, no parties, no graduation, no weddings. What is this? You're going crazy, man. You know, you're some upside down, Ulta Buddhi. You know. So this has to happen. If this doesn't happen, then you're getting nowhere. If you keep the same old, then you end up in the same old samsara. Same sum. Same sum. Sum means samsara. S-A-M same. S-A-M samsara. 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 They say, well, you should stay the same. Why don't you just stay the same? I like you the way, just stay the way you are. Just stay the same. You were so nice before. Now you're acting like a nutcase. Well, same samsara. No, it's different. I'm different now. You're different. Yes, I'm different. You're right. I'm different. I got born again. Dvija. Don't you know? I was an egg. You know? Another name for bird in Sanskrit. Bird is called dvija. Pakhi is called dvija. Has two births. The mother goes boop. And he's inside the mother, right? You know that, inside the mother, as an egg. Living entities in the egg. So that's one birth. The mother goes poop and drops out an egg in the nest, right? Everyone understands birds. So there's one egg inside the nest. That's a birth, born from the mother, right? And now it stays in the egg for some time, then comes out of the shell, and then flies out. That's a second birth. That's called dvija. Dvija means bird. So this egg doesn't look much like a bird. Does it look like a bird?
No.
Egg looks like a bird?
No.
No. This looks like a ball. Looks like some little ball, that's all. A little elliptical thing. Usually they're elliptical shape. Oval-like, elliptical. So then if we take second birth, we shouldn't look like we did before. You look like what happened? You look so different. Yeah, especially the men, you know. But yeah, you had this nice mustache, you know, and long, nice hair, black hair. My mother, I used to put my hands through your hair. You're my son, and now you come home with a shaved head. It's all scratchy up there and rough, and you look so strange. You look like some ET from another planet, extraterrestrial. And she says all these derogatory things and negative things. And then when you go in the Vaishnava Raja Sabha, they say, oh, you look so effulgent. You look like you're from Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha man. So much tej have coming out of your face and you look so brilliant. You must be doing nice bhajan. You look so brilliant. You look so blissful. You look like Rupa Goswami. You look like Lord Chaitanya. It's like they say like these things. But then you're so much appreciation among the Vaishnavas. But when you go with the Mayavadis, Maya bodies. There's Maya bodies and there's Maya bodies.
Bodies.
Maya bodies. Those persons whose bodies are in Maya. Then they say, oh, you look so strange. What happened? What happened to your beautiful hair? Of course, hair is nothing but stool. Nails, stool, nails, actual stool, nails and hair are all in the same category in terms of purity. They're all contaminated substances. If hair, nails, or stool touch anything, that thing has to be washed, has to be purified. And we think, my hair. In terms of Vedic Dharma, what is shud and ashud, nails, hair, and stool are all the same. Ashud, contaminated, putrid, dirty things. That's why yogic Brahmins, they always shave their heads. You see all these old paintings, swaha, they shaved it. All this beard stuff, they can't do yoga with beard. It's bogus. So, this second birth, so you look like egg, now you look like bird. You've changed. So this proves that there's diksha, that you have, when you get a new body, you get a new set of friends, you get a new engagement. You get a new engagement. When you get a new body, you're not doing the same job you did last life. You get a new job, new mother and father, new friends, new thoughts, new ideas. So diksha means this, second birth. You get new friends, new engagement, new thoughts, new work, new ideas. And that's good. That's very good. That's liberating. It's fun. Oh, who needs all those old stupid people? What was the value of their association? They're always trying to exploit me one way or the other. They're not giving any contribution to me. What is the help? What did they do for me? And then when we get diksha, we get a new name, right? It's considered a new life. In one sense, diksha is a death. You have to die to live. It's the death of a person. Because we all have our own material ego and pride. And that is the basis of our life. Our whole life, our whole material existence is based on ego and pride. Hankara and dhamba. Pride, dhamba. Man, sometimes called man. Our whole material existence is based on this. So this diksha, this cuts this ego and pride. We become Trinadapi Sunichena. Amani na mani dena kirtaniya sadahari. By kirtan, we become prideless. So it's a new life. So then material life is finished, because material life is based on false ego, material ego. Because we think we're a man, we think we're a woman, we think we're big, this, that, the other thing. But diksha gives us transcendental knowledge, and we realize what is our sarup. Our actual position, our eternal sarup is to be Krishna's devotee, Krishna's servant. I am a servant. I'm meant to be dependent. I'm dependent on God, and now I realize it. I was in illusion. I was in illusion of independence. I was dreaming of independence. Independence is a dream. Now I've woken up from the dream and realized I'm dependent at every step of the way. I've always been dependent. I've been forever dependent. But due to illusion, due to false ego and pride, I have thought for thousands of eons of lifetimes that I was independent, that I am the doer. I was the doer. I was the controller. I was the creator. I was the enjoyer. It was all a bluff. It was all a spoof. It was all a grand illusion. Now I have come to my senses, as they say. I've woken up. Jeev jago, gora chandra bole. Kota nidra jao maya, pisa chira kole. Kole, open up, get up. So when we give up false ego and surrender to Guru, we get initiated. This is initiation. Then you get new ego. Instead of thinking you are so-and-so, and you are independent, now you have a new ego, a true ego, an eternal ego, and an eternal identity. I belong to Krishna. I belong to God. I am Krishna's. I am Krishna's, and I am Krishna's and my Guru's eternal servant. This is my identity. That is our new life. So Guru Pada Shraya means You give up this material life, which is based on false ego and false identity, and take a new life. That's why it's called spiritual life, initiation, spiritual life, right? New life. Now material life. Oh, now I'm engaged in spiritual life. I'm practicing spiritual life. What were you doing before? Material life, based on false ego and pride, and falsely thinking I was dependent, independent. Now I've declared my dependence on God. I surrendered to Guru, Guru Parashraya. Now I'm Krishna Das. I have a new name. Now I have new friends, I have new thoughts, I have new ideas, and new feelings, and new engagements, and new hopes, and new viewpoints. I'm a different person. Hey, you're not the same as I used to know. You're like different. You know, I don't know what it is. It's like you're different. And you say, yes, I should hope so. If I'm the same, then there's no change. No change, no improvement. Oh, I met you 20 years ago, you were making 100 rupees a day. Now you're still making 100 rupees a day. You're a very good businessman. Would people think much of you? 20 years ago, you were making 100 rupees a day. Now after 20 years in business, you're still making 100 rupees a day. So human life is meant for improvement, not just improving your bank account, improving your consciousness account, improving your awareness account. So this is a good sign if someone gets a new life. That is a new life. So Guru Parashraya means you give up this material life based on false ego and false identity and take a new life. That's why it's called initiation. Now we're going to initiate a new 5-year plan for India. Today we're cutting the ribbon and initiating a new highway. So initiation means beginning. It doesn't mean the end. Everything that you're doing now, taking examinations, this is so you get accepted in the university. These are entrance exams. You have to pass the entrance exams, examination of the guru. And then maybe you get accepted. Then you get enrolled in the university. You get diksha. Testing period. When you want to go to school, some mundane school, there's so many. You've heard this term, no? Entrance examinations. That doesn't mean you're in the college. Maybe you never get in. You take all the exams and they say, very good, very nice, but there's 10,000 people, there's 500 seats, and you didn't get one. Try again next time. So initiation means beginning. One birth from the parents, second birth from Guru. Then you get spiritual life from the Guru and you become a spiritual person, Krishna Das and Radha Dasi. Gaur Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol. So this is some thoughts on Guru Purnima. Of course it's getting on now. That was 1 hour and 4 minutes. Would you like to ask any questions?
Ravindu? Talk about this and like we get closer or approximation. And maybe this one life we cover 1%, 2% or whatever.
And that's why it said we get guru, we may get guru for many lives. The guru, until the disciple becomes liberated, the guru keeps coming back until he gets liberated. Liberated means until he surrenders. As we said, when you surrender, you're liberated. As soon as we surrendered, we're out. So that's why I'm saying this surrender is done on an installment basis. Every lifetime, a little more. It's rare where surrenders completely in one life. Krishna says, Yeya tamam prapadyante, tam sataiva bhajamyam, mama vartmana vartante, manasya sarvasaha. He says, as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. So this means that there's some geometric progression in surrender. Oh, you surrender 10%? I surrender 10%. You surrender 50%? You want to go with me like your wife, huh? 50-50? Okay, cool. They say, I'll meet you halfway. Wife, I'll give you 50%, you give me 50%. But that, with God, He wants 100%. He's a very demanding master. But we might say, ooh, 100%. Ooh, that's quite a bit. Oh, a little bit for Krishna, a little bit for me. A little bit more for Krishna, a little bit less for me. a little bit more for Krishna, ooh, less for me. Then finally, all for Krishna and none for me. Then you're free. You're out. all for Krishna, none for me, then you're free. But now it's like, all for me, all for me, none for he, and never be free. All for me, none for he, never be free. This is the basic motto of the material world. All for me, none for he, never be free. We are three. God, my wife, and me. But it's more like this, order. We are three. Me, my wife, and God.
Yogis also, and supposing somebody is covered, maybe 10%, 20%, or whatever, then is there any chance, like normally he gets a better buzz so that he can like go ahead, but some people after a few buzzes go back also?
Anything's possible. What goes up must come, can come down. But generally it's told that because there's some conditions, if one makes aparad or matahati, matahati offense, mad elephant offense, he offends a great Vaishnava, he can practically eliminate his devotional accomplishment to a very fine seedling state practically. His flowering creeper can be diminished back down to some small root can remain in the citta and then have to start over again. But generally if someone is sincere about his practice and he falls down, and it says he carries on where he left off. And numerous places Srila Prabhupada said that don't think that this is the first lifetime that you're practicing bhakti. You, my disciples, have practiced bhakti for many lifetimes. So therefore it's accumulative. You put some money in the bank in this life and you come back and they say, oh, you're Mr. Smith? Yeah, here, you have an account over here. You have 10,000 rupees from last life. Oh, that's nice. Okay, now I start putting in more. Now I have 11, 12. So we have a bhakti account, devotional account that's kept by Krishna. So then from this life, then our account is picked up in next life. So generally, it's told that people, if they follow Varnashram Dharma, they move up the Varnas. If they follow Varnashram Dharma connected to Vaishnavism, then they move up the Varnas and they also move up the Ashrams. And they can be a Shudra one life, then Vaishya, then Kshatriya, then Brahman, then Brahmachari, then Grihastha Vanaprastha, then Sannyas. It's like this. And there's so many lives, they may be Brahman, then they take Sannyas, but then they get stuck in the Sannyas for some lives due to some anomalies or some aparad or some fall down. Yoga Brashta Vijayate. Suchinam Srimatam Gehi Yoga Brashta Vijayate. Krishna is telling in 6th chapter of Gita that yoga brushed, if one falls from his yoga after a short time, he's been a good yogi, bhakti yogi, gyan yogi, karma yogi, whatever. After he falls from his yoga practice after a short time, then he takes birth in a rich family, Suchinam. Excuse me, Srimatam, a wealthy family. But if he falls after a longer time, then he takes birth in a Suchi. Suchina means Brahmin family, irregardless of what his previous birth was. And if he falls after long practice, then he takes Suchinam Srimatam Gay. Yeah, he takes birth in a Brahmin family after a long time. But if he's really fortunate, then he takes birth, it can be Brahmin family or not, but he takes birth in a Vaishnav family, a very pure Vaishnav family, from birth. And so from birth, because you may take birth in a Brahmin family, but they may be smartas. They may be attached to rules and regulations of Gyanu, Upasana Kanda or Gyana Kanda or Karma Kanda Brahmins. Karma Kandiya Brahmins, only thinking about Swarga Mukti or elevation in the material world somewhere. That's also a Brahmin family. So that's not as good as Vaishnavism. Because a Vaishnav Brahmin birth, or not even a Brahmin, but a Vaishnav family, Vaishnava can get liberated. A Brahmin may take rebirth because he's attached to Karma Kanda or Gyana Kanda. So Vaishnava is more than a Brahmin, because liberation is guaranteed for the Vaishnava, but it's not sure for the Brahmin. So the best is to be a Brahmin Vaishnava, or Vaishnava Brahmin. So this is told in Bhagavad Gita. So you can continue where you left off. no doubt. But if you, there are conditions, if you fall down or you're sinful or really go against the Lord, then you can just take everything away. All devotional standing is given by God. It's a gift. It's all an arrangement of God's mercy, whatever we have. God has extended His mercy to the devotee to give him some position or some elevation or some awareness or remembrance or knowledge or consciousness of God. God gives and God takes away. So if you offend God's representatives or the great devotees of the Lord, then God says, what is this? I've given you so much. I've given you so much wealth from my side. Now you're offending the acharyas, the gurus, the great mahants and Vaishnavas. Hey, you rascal, then take everything away. Now you'll be punished for a few lives. So you may come an animal. Or you may come a lower birth. But you have some remembrance. Oh, actually, my last life I did something wrong. And now and then, so they become rikshawala. But every time you get a Vaishnava in your rickshaw, oh please, I'll take you anywhere. No rupees, I'll just take you. And you start doing seva and take a very humble position. Start serving and appreciating all the Vaishnavas because you can have some understanding. In my last life I offended Vaishnavas. This can be told, this can be also seen by a good Jyotish, if you can find one. Just like oftentimes a Jyotish will tell you, oh, you were born in a good family, and you got because in your last life you served so many sadhus, you did so much charity or whatever, so therefore you're wealthy in this life. These are all karmic connections. They can be seen. Of course, it can be understood philosophically also. Good birth, pious birth is a result of punya in the last life. And these are different types of punya. But it can be seen even specifically in a person's chart that you did this particular thing or that particular thing. Is that all right? Something else?
One thing, it is said that one has to be in the renounced order of life to be liberated. It means to be...
Who says?
One of the lectures I was hearing, Prabhupada is saying something two things, like if we want to hold something nice, we have to leave something which is bad. So one has to be in the renounced order of life. Does that mean like renouncing the fruits of our activities and giving up material life?
Yeah, I think in Madhva Sampradaya, for example, and their teachings, they say that only if one is a sannyasi can get liberated to Vaikuntha, which is their goal. Although we have some vague connection with Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, because the connection is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took initiation from the Madhva Sampradaya. They're telling that until you become sannyasi, you can't go to Vaikuntha. So it's quite a limited sampradaya. And you can't take sannyasi unless you're born in a Brahmin family. There's many people that are followers of Madhva in South India, in Udupi. They worship Udupi Krishna, but this is actually not what they preach, and this is the fact. So it may be a little disheartening to someone who's not a Brahmin, or maybe they only have Brahmin followers, I don't know. So, but people just think, oh, this is not my... Anyway, let me worship Udupi Krishna, and gradually, in a few lifetimes, I'll become Brahmin, and then I'll get liberated. But in Gaudiya Sampradaya, this is not the teaching here. That Lord Chaitanya is teaching that anyone can go to Radha Krishna who is a pure devotee. So when Prabhupada is saying about renounced order of life, in that particular context, of course I'd have to hear or see the whole chapter or context of what you're citing. But generally what the meaning of it is in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we must renounce the idea that I own anything. Like Pundarik Vidyanidhi, or the Pandavas. The Pandavas, for example, were they in the renounced order of life? So someone will say no. Someone will say yes. So externally, according to Varna, or Ashram, they were Grihasthas. So that's not renounced order of life. Generally, we think this means renunciate, tyagi, or sannyasi, vairagi. So by Varna or Ashram, they were Grihasthas. But they were devotees. They were bhaktas, Krishna bhaktas. And what kind of bhaktas? They were pure, shud bhaktas. Right? And they were in sakiras with Krishna. Sakiras, vatsalyaras. And their devotion is pure. It's described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So although they were surrounded by all kinds of opulence, unlimited palaces and gold and servants and chapan bhog every day, eating everything and having the most beautiful, you know, children and wife Kunti and mother Kunti and Draupadi is like Lakshmi Devi, everything, but they were not attached. Everything, all their subjects, all their position, everything they had, they used for the glorification of Krishna. They engaged all their subjects in praja and glorifying Krishna. They engaged all their household items in glorifying Krishna and serving Krishna. Engaged all their household members and servants in the glorification of Krishna. Understanding that everything we have belongs to Krishna. So this is the real, this is Krishna Sambandha. This is, what is it? Krishna Sambandha. The verses here. Yeah, in Gaur Leela, if you look at Gaur Leela, there's only a handful of devotees that were sannyasis, and they were friends, they were associates of Lord Chaitanya, but they were seniors to him who were initiated either in the Advaitin Sampradaya or in the Madhva Sampradaya. So you can see, there's those specifically, they were in Puri, Brahmananda Bharati, Paramananda Puri. Prominent Puri, like Ishwar Puri, Madhavendra Puri, they were coming. Madhavendra Puri and Ishwar Puri, they were in Madhva Sampradaya, Vaishnavas. So Paramananda Puri was in Puri. Then there's Brahmananda Bharati. Brahmananda Bharati was initiated in the Advaitin Sampradaya, you know, Mayavad. And Lord Chaitanya was initiated by Keshav Bharati, technically in the Mayavad, Advaitin Sampradaya. So these few, four or five sannyasis, they were from other sampradayas, Madhva Sampradaya or Advaitin Sampradaya. They were associating with Lord Chaitanya and Jagannath Puri. And it's also told that Gadadhar Pandit was some type of Kshetra sannyas, and that even Gadadhar took sannyas, and there's a few other sannyasis, Jagannanda Pandit. A few people maybe took sannyas, or at least it's told like that. But that's not so clear. But it's only four or five, six, seven, eight maximum. From any quarter, any direction, that were actually by sannyasis. But 500 people came every year, 500 disciples, devotees, not disciples, but devotees and followers, Gauranga Bhaktas, came every year for Chaturmasya from Navadvip, Ambik Kalana, Shantipur, Shivananda Sain, Advaita, Nityananda and his wife, everybody came. And they were all Grihasthas, Narihari Sarkar, they were all, as far as I know, they were all Grihasthas. Mukunda Das, Mukunda Datta, they're all Grihasthas. So as Prabhu was saying, that most of the followers of Lord Chaitanya are Grihasthas, but they lived in this kind of consciousness. Their consciousness was in the renounced order of life. They lived the renounced order of life. For example, someone may be technically in the renounced order of life. They may be a sannyasi by Varna, but they may be very attached. This is my ashram. Don't touch. This is my ashram. This is my safari car. This is my cell phone. These are my cows. This is my property. This is my so they're very attached, and they don't have any idea that these things belong to God, and they're using all these things for them, for their comfort, even pleasure. They have color TV. They have disc on the roof of their ashram. They have big disc, and they watch all kinds of shows on the TV, and they enjoy. So are they in the renounced order of life? This is from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Eastern Division, Wave 1, Section 1, Eastern Division. Purva, it's called Purva Vibhag. And the second, Dvitiya Lahari, the second ocean, verse 255-256. This is also quoted in the teachings of Sanatan Shikshan, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Anasaktasya Vishayan Yatarham Upayunjataha Nirabandha Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagyam Yuchate Prapanchikataya Budhya Hari Sambandhi Vastuna Mukshubi Prityago Vairagyam Pagukatyate. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts anything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. On the other hand, one who rejects everything without knowledge of its relationship to Krishna is not as complete in his renunciation. Like someone says, oh, I'm a Vairagya. I reject this world. I'm this Kinshan. I'm a Kinshan. I don't want anything in this world. I reject this entire world. I'm just living whatever comes. I don't want anything in this world. All this world is Maya. Someone might say, oh, he's a big Vairagya. But he's showing possessiveness. He's projecting the idea that he owned the world to start with. I give up all attachment to this world. I don't need this world. But this world is not yours to renounce. It's like going in the bank and saying, going in the Citibank, how much money is in this bank? Or is 10 lakhs in this bank? 100 lakhs. I renounce all the money in this bank. I have no attraction for any of this money. I renounce it all. People say, you fool. You don't even have an account in this bank. You don't have 1,000 rupees in this bank. You don't own any shares. You're not a trustee. You have nothing to do in this bank. You're a nut person. So how can you renounce all the money when you don't have 1 rupee in the bank? You don't own any. You don't possess any of the money. So how can we renounce this material world? I've renounced the material world. Oh, really? You owned it before. You possessed it. It belonged to you. This world. Who does this world belong to? Does it belong to you, Sannyasi Baba? Hey Maharaj, this world belongs to you. Yes, I renounce the world. I just live under this tree and stand on one leg. Acha, you're a big sadhu. But is he really renounced? He's not renounced. Someone who recognizes, yes, everything in this world belongs to Krishna, but now all these people are using these things in the service of Maya. I should take all these things from these people and use it for Krishna's pleasure. Build temples and goshalas and schools that teach about Krishna and use everything for Krishna's service. So that's why it says, one who sees, said, this is the line Prabhupada always quotes, Nirbanda Krishna Sambande, which is quote, Nirbanda, without Nirband, no bond, no bondage. Krishna Sambande. Proper Yuktam Vairagyam Uchate. So you were asking about a Vairagi. A renounced order of life means a Vairagi. So if someone sees Nirbanda, everything in relationship with Krishna, then this is real renunciation. So then he remains free from bondage. He doesn't become he's not attached to anything. If Krishna gives me something, I offer it to him for his service, his pleasure. If he gives me nothing, okay. Well, everything's his. Nothing. What is mine? What is this body mine? Did I give myself this body? I'm a self. I'm an atma. I entered the womb at the time of conception through the semen and ovum, through the man's semen. I entered some woman's womb. And then I said, "Oh yes, I need a body. So give me some bones. Give me some." I gave myself a body. Who arranged that body to be developed in the womb? Me. You did it. You built it like you built a spaceship out in the space. You send up a rocket. What did they say? I don't know. Someone was telling me. I couldn't believe it. There's some space station out there, floating around out there. And they go up in a rocket and they bring little parts, little pieces, walls and beams and things. And they tack them up and make some little nest up there, a little bird's nest. Like a bird flies around and picks up a piece of straw and he goes in a tree and he puts it there, another piece of straw. And then he connects it and he has a little nest and he sits in it and goes, so they spend $50 zillion, $500 billion, France, America, Germany, Japan, all the rich guys have a lot of money to burn. And then they fly up and they make a bird's nest. They make a bird's nest, you know, 50,000 miles up in the sky somewhere. It's called a space station. And they're very proud of it. Look, we human beings, the crown of creation, the most intelligent beings, we've gone and we've made a bird nest in space. That's what we've done with your taxpayers' money. So we're charging you tax, luxury tax, property tax, road tax, liquor tax, booze tax, sales tax. You buy something, you got to pay tax. If you spend any money, you got to give some to us. You buy some milk, there's milk tax, food tax, property tax, sales tax, everything tax. And what do we do with it? We take all your hard-earned money and we make a bird's nest in space. But we give it a fancy name, space station. Oh wow, space station. Space station means to fly up in space and lay eggs. Because they just fly up in space in fast air. I had to pay $50 billion for some astronaut to go up in space and pass air. And pass stool. I mean, you can just stay on the ground and walk to the stool field and it doesn't cost anything. And I got to pay $50 billion to send this jerk up in space to pass stool. It doesn't go down there, it goes up. Because there's no gravity. At least here it falls on the field and there's no problem. It's not problematic. Even there it's a big problem. So this is real vairagya. This is renounced order of life. Renounced order of life means you're living your life. Life means your life, how you're living. It doesn't matter what your ashram is. Everyone, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, everyone can be in the renounced order of life if they live according to this verse. Nirbandha, Krishna sambandhe, yuktam, vairagyam, yuchate. Every real devotee of the Lord is a vairagi. Grihastha vairagi, vanaprastha vairagi, brahmachari vairagi, sannyasi vairagi. Everyone is a vairagi, a true vairagi. That's what he said. He's really, otherwise it's vairagyam phagu katite. Phagu means fake, inferior. There's a river called Phagu Nadi. Phagu Nadi is a river. When it's really a heavy rainy season, then that riverbed is full of water. It's flowing like anything. You can see the water. But when it's not rainy season, the rain, because it dries out, the rain, it's a very sandy bottom, very thick sandy bottom, very sandy bottom. The rain withdraws and seeps into the earth. So it's called Phagu Nadi, Phagu River. It's in Madhya Pradesh or somewhere. It actually exists in India. And it's called Phagu because it looks like falls. Because you just see sand, but if you put your hand in the sand and you go down about a foot, there's water flowing there. There's water there. And in rainy season, you can see it. So this, it's called Phagu Vairagya. Oh, he looks like a big sannyasi. Well, let's go live with the sannyasi. The guy's attached to his pen. I borrowed the pen from his desk. And I used it for a couple hours, and he was yelling, "Where's my pen? Who took my pen?" So attached. So it's false renunciation because it's based on the body. It's not based on God. It's based on misconception. I'm renouncing this world. It's not your world to renounce. I'm very detached. But by devotion, automatically you get vairagya and knowledge, vijnana vairagya. So this is the true renunciation. So he's calling it Phagu Vairagya. There's no water there. Always detached from everything. But you put your hand down and you find out so much water is flowing there. So Phagu Vairagya. Externally looks like no water. Dry. Oh, he's dried up. He's not engaged in the material world. He's so detached. But then you get a little closer and observe. You find out he's so attached. You go below the surface and you find so much water flowing there. This is Phagu. But this Yukta Vairagya, this Phagu Vairagya and Yukta Vairagya. Real vairagya means Krishna sambandha. See Krishna in everything. Relate, join everything to Krishna. Sambandha means to link everything. See the relationship of Krishna with everything. Your relation to Krishna, your wife's relationship, your house relationship, every object's relationship. And then connect it. Then nirbandha, then there's no bondage for you. There's no more bondage. There's no more birth and death. So this way everyone can live a renounced life. Living a renounced life means a renounced order of life. It's the order of Lord Chaitanya. The order of Lord Chaitanya is to think like this, to act like this, to be like this. Every real true devotee of Krishna, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is a renunciate.